We all know the big game can get pretty unpredictable, which is why you need a connection that is anything but to watch it. With the Xfinity 10G network, you get the reliable connection you need to stream your favorite sports, from football to football, everything in between. Catch it all on the network made for streaming. Treat yourself to front row seats to all the games and get way more into all the sports you're into when you stream on the next generation Xfinity 10G network.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Kane Collects. If you've been listening to the podcast, thank you very much. If this is your first podcast, I hope you enjoy it. If you missed any of the other podcasts, you can always go back and check out all the other episodes. We talk cards, comic books, toys, Funko Pops, shoes. If you can collect it, like I always say, I'll talk about it. And if you, like I said, if you enjoy the podcast, please let a friend or a family member or somebody know about it. They can download it on Odyssey, Spotify, Apple, Google Play, wherever they get their podcasts. And I'm just going to bring in my next guest for this episode. Really excited to talk about this. This is the first episode where we're going to talk about this, which is collecting toys. I'm talking to the owner of Funky Town Toys, Chaz Morris. Chaz, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure. I can't wait. I got a lot of good insight into this. I've been into this as a collector for 30 some odd years and as a seller for 20 some odd years. So I'm excited to kind of get into it.
Yeah, definitely. I know people that I've spoken to that collect not cards, but like toys and other kind of objects like that are really into it, and they're very passionate about it. And I think collectors as a whole are passionate, but I feel like maybe toy collectors might be a little bit more passionate, but we'll see here. And hopefully you can educate our listeners on, you know, just the toys and collectible industry as it is. But before I get into that, Chaz, why don't you let people know where Funky Town Toys is and what your hours of operation and things like that.
So we are in Utica. So we are off. We are actually on Van Dyke, and we are just north of Hull Road. So we're 7 days a week. We open at noon every day, and depending on the day of the week, we pretty much close between 6 and 8, depending on the day. But we're 7 days a week.
And how long have you been there?
This location, we've been just over 2 years. We've been in business. We're just getting ready to celebrate our 8th anniversary. We started off in Sterling Heights. We were at our first location about 5.5 years. We moved when our lease was up, and we've been here just over 2. We really love this spot because we're kind of in like a little kind of grouping of collector shops, like along Van Dyke within a 3-mile stretch. I think there's maybe like 8 different collector shops, and they're all different. It's gaming, it's Funko Pops, it's books, it's comic books, it's cards. But there's like 8 of us in this 3-mile stretch. So it's really a destination. If anybody's not aware of the cluster, that collector cluster that's right there, look into it, because there's a bunch of us that are right by each other.
Yeah, I mean, you're actually absolutely right. I was surprised. And so when you're driving around, sometimes you got to look and slow down because maybe they're hidden, they're mom and pop shops you never heard about, things like that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. There are more shops than I realized driving up and down Van Dyke. Are you on social media? Do you have Facebook? Do you have a website? Can you let people know about?
So the shop has a Facebook page under Funky Town Toys, and we're also on Twitter under Funky Town Toys. So on Twitter, I'll often take pictures of incoming product and list it, what's new. And Facebook is kind of, we'll announce events that we're having and communicate with everybody. And so, yeah, those are the two social media platforms that the shop is on.
All right. So I think a lot of people that collect toys or think about collecting toys or buy toys, What makes toys or certain toys collectible or valuable? Is it as simple as desirability, rarity, things like that, or is it something more or less to it?
I think a lot of it would be rarity, like the way they're made, and they come by the case, and some of them are just made in smaller numbers. It's just your basic supply and demand. Certain characters just sell through. I mean, Deadpool, Spider-Man, Boba Fett, CM Punk, like there's certain ones that are so popular that supply never seems to catch up with demand. And over time, it just, those ones invariably shoot up in value. A lot of it's just rarity. It's the coolness factor of what the toy is with the rarity, how hard it was to find. There's certain toys that are just really difficult to find in the wild because they're just so popular, and some of them are just made in some small numbers. For whatever reason, certain assortments just show up in small numbers. I really don't know why that is. I just know it is. So it's a rarity thing. It's some of this stuff shoots up overnight, seemingly. Just as an example, Marvel Legends has these new Spider-Man figures that are based off of No Way Home. They didn't come out with figures when the movie came out, but they're coming out with figures now. And they retail for like $25, but they're really popular. They're really hard to find. If you try to buy one online now, they're already $40, $45. And they just came out like a week or two ago. But it's based off of kind of like the time of year it is, and people want it for Christmas, and it's hard to find. So that's an example of something brand new that's already shooting up. And you can just tell when those things are going to be gone. They're going to be expensive. They just based on popularity of the character. So there's a lot of factors, but a lot of it is just kind of like who the character is and coolness factor and rarity and how hard was it to find. And a lot of the stuff ends up at clearance. But some of it you just simply can't find in the wild either. So there's this real variance of availability and how easy these things are to find.
You find that like popularity has a lot to do with it, or is there some toys that weren't mainstream, they weren't popular, it wasn't Star Wars or something that everyone knew, or Marvel? Are there toys that are like, hey, this was kind of like a one-off, one and done, and then because it was a one and done, like, hey, that became really valuable? Or is it like, hey, no one wanted it then, they don't want it now?
Well, the really popular lines are going to be like your Star Wars, your superhero stuff, your wrestling. Like those are made in big numbers because they know they're going to be popular. I guess they're considered evergreen properties. They never really go away. And then you got oddball stuff that, you're right, it kind of comes and it kind of hits and then it's sort of gone. And then there's a demand for it. Like a Family Guy toys would be a good example. Our Futurama toys would be a good example. They're very popular and they're very expensive because they're kind of like a niche market. And when they came out, they weren't made in big numbers. So now, I don't know, if you want like a Bender action figure from Futurama, you're paying north of $100 just based off rarity and popularity. And so, you're right. It just depends, like, if it's something they were one and done, like they did a toy line for a movie and then that's it. You know what I mean? So then there's a good chance those are going to shoot up over time.
So in like cards and music, like you can find certain print runs, like, hey, I know they made like, or you can calculate or estimate, like, and sometimes they'll just straight up tell you, we made 1,000 of these, we made 100 of these, whatever. In the toy market, is that similar? Do they put out a number, or do you have to figure it out? Or is there something they tell you guys or the distributors or dealers?
They never release numbers, but you can tell case assortments. You can tell when a case comes out, certain figures are 2 to a case and certain figures are 1 to a case. So you can tell the 1 per cases are typically more valuable. They're harder to find. That's normal, but they never release actual numbers of actual production. Generally, toy manufacturers will try not to underproduce. It's actually hurt them in the past. Action figure collectors are often like completists. They want the whole line. So they actually do make an effort for it not to be too difficult on collectors. There's been instances in the past where they make something too rare and it just upsets the fan base. So I think they do try to avoid from making it too rare, honestly, but they do store exclusive. So they're still rare, but they're not going to do. One time in the 90s, there was a toy company that did something where they only made like 1,000 or something of a main line. And there was so much backlash, a lot of collectors quit. So that was just kind of like an extreme example of the manufacturer made it too rare and it actually hurt like the whole line. So I think they do try to avoid that.
Does it matter if a toy is still in its original packaging or out of it? Like, I've seen a lot of toy stores where obviously kids are going to play with toys. When you bought them originally, you didn't think like they're going to be worth anything. And you're like, good luck telling a little kid not to play with a toy, right? I'm going to open it. I'm going to play with it. So does that devalue it or does it not devalue it because they're meant to be played with? What's the deal with that?
I would say to be enjoyed, you should open it. If it's kept in good shape, I think that's all anybody really cares about ultimately is that it's in good shape. So if you open it and keep it in good shape, it's probably going to maintain, I don't know, 75, 80% of its value than if it was just in its package. But to really be enjoyed, just me personally, I think open it up and display it and, you know, pose it or, you know, put it somewhere as decoration or as a collector, as a kid, obviously you play with it. But if it's kept in good shape, that's all anybody cares about. And if you decide to sell it down the road, if it's in good shape, it's still going to be fine. I would say open it.
Okay. But there is probably a premium as if it's in the original package still.
There is. It's worth more. But if you're buying strictly for resale, then you keep it in its package. But to actually enjoy the figure as a collector, you open that baby. I mean, that's just.
So condition matters though, just like any other collectible, right? I mean, it's
condition is everything. Yeah. So when vintage toys come in, Star Wars toys is a great example. When I was a kid, I was a kid of the 70s. I remember everybody had Star Wars toys. When they come in here, often they're just beat up. Like that's how it was. The figures themselves aren't very rare anymore, but finding them in good condition is rare. So, and that the pricing is everything on that. A beat up one might be $5. If it's in great shape, it might be $50, $75. So condition plays a giant role. The accessories, are the accessories there or not? That plays a big role. Often the accessories are worth more than the figure because they're more rare because kids lost them. So it all plays a factor, but condition is everything. Oh yeah.
What about like, so you know how they bring back toys, right? Well, I mean, I don't know if like a Slinky or a Rubik's Cube or whatever, like yeah. The originals though, are those like, how do you tell an original? I mean, I guess, is it printed on the toy already?
Always a date.
Okay.
There's always a date on there. And sometimes that's the only way I could tell.
Really?
There's always a date. So sometimes something will come in. I can't tell if it's from 1984 or, you know, 2020, and I have to find a date because sometimes they do exact replicas. And unless you put them side by side, you can't tell. So, yeah, but that's pretty normal where they'll re-release a vintage toy and it looks just like the original down to the package. It's this whole nostalgia thing. They're all doing it. All of them are doing it. You can find Star Wars toys where the packages look just like they did in the 70s. G.I. Joe, same thing. Mutant Turtles, same thing. Power Rangers, same thing. The packages look just like the originals. Ghostbusters, the figures look just like the originals down to the box. And it's like just these re-releases they do, which is great for, it's great for collectors who don't want to spend so much money buying the originals, and you can't really find them in good shape like that anyway. So it's a good alternative for collectors, a good affordable alternative, but they're all doing it. You see it all over the place. Yeah.
Would you say action figures and things like that are the most popular? What does your store carry, and what do you generally sell like the most of, or what are people asking for the most of?
So we're the full name of the business is Funky Town Toys. We are a toy show, but underneath we're comics and collectibles. So we're probably, I would say, 70-75% action figures in here, or just toys in general, because we do have a section for your general kind of Lego, doll section for girls. There, we do have some of that stuff, but we're predominantly action figures. We do also carry comic books, Pokemon cards, Funko Pops. Those are kind of the big four. We have some statues and stuff like that, but those are kind of the big four that we carry, but we're predominantly action figures. One of the reasons is they're just so hard to find at retail. Big box retail, just, I don't want to say they're bad at it, but the selection is really tough there. If you're a parent and your child asks for a certain wrestler, God bless you if you can find that at retail. There's like, how many different wrestlers are there? A few hundred? And how many are at the store at any given time? Like five or six? Like, it's just, it's really hard on parents selection wise at those big box stores. So that's kind of like one of the thing we focus on is we have these big sections for these each individual intellectual properties. And we just got, I mean, our wrestling section has, I don't know, 300 figures over there probably.
Man, like when I was a kid growing up, it was WWF before it became WWE. And I remember as a kid, all I wanted was every wrestling figure. When you went to, like, you know, back then, like KB Toys or Toys R Us or wherever toy store you got to go into, whether it's a, you know, Kmart back then, like I said, I saw them and I'm like, I want all of them. And you're right, there were so many of them. You get the ring and you want the Royal Rumble with every single wrestler there was. And so you're saying it's just nonstop. With, I mean, they made one for everybody, right?
And even even like movies, like if a movie comes out, a lot of times they'll come out with a toy line to support a movie, but then it kind of hits stores and then it's gone forever in like 2 or 3 months. So like the turnover at retail is just so quick. A lot of the stuff it hits and then it's gone. So, I mean, I think that's why there's a place for a store like us where we have this older stuff that some of it is maybe like from 6 months ago, but it's gone from retail. You're not going to find it at retail at this point. So, but even like, wrestling's a perfect example because you got the new guys, then you got Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper and all the old guys that Mattel does a very good job of working in the old kind of Hall of Fame guys. So to have that good mix, but yeah, it's kind of one of those, the wrestling section, it kind of ebbs and flows. Like it'll get hot, it'll get cold. It's kind of like, but it never quite goes away, right? That show's on every week. So I can see where it kind of cools off. Like maybe the fans aren't into it for a spell and then like they'll get into it and I'll see them coming more often. And I'll see more kids coming. Like I could, like my sections kind of like get hot and cold depending on what kind of media is coming out at the time. Like my Star Wars section kind of ebbs and flows depending on what shows are coming out. And the same with my Marvel section, kind of depending on what movies are coming out. Like, they get hot and they get cold. They kind of like ebb and flow. It's always in motion.
Yeah. So is there anything that's like, they just, is like G.I. Joe still worth anything? Or or is that because you mentioned Star Wars and then superhero stuff has just been crazy hot the last, you know, decade or so.
Yeah. G.I. Joe is interesting because the vintage G.I. Joe is so popular. I think that line was around from like 1982 to maybe like 1994. So the original vintage stuff was in toy stores for quite some time. And then it got really popular in the early 2000s and it was around for a while. And then now it disappeared from stores for like 8 years. And then it came back last year and it was only like a Walmart exclusive and they were really hard to find. So most people couldn't find them, but now they do these new ones that are taller. They're about 6 inches or so. They're called G.I. Joe Classified. They're very detailed. They retail for about $25 each and people love them. So that one, I'm not really sure what kind of media G.I. Joe has supporting at this point. I think they did a movie about a year ago, but that section is very solid. It's one of the better performers for sure. And I find it interesting because, like I said, it was gone from retail for, I want to say, like 8 years. So maybe that's part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is Hasbro released the new G.I. Joes at the same time they did these Ghostbuster ones. And what I noticed was retailers couldn't keep the G.I. Joe in stock. Like, you literally could not find those things forever. You couldn't order them online. You couldn't find them in stores. They were just like so popular, you just couldn't get them. And then the Ghostbuster ones were just kind of sitting there. And I think it just kind of showed, and nothing against Ghostbusters, they're great, they look fantastic, but I think from an audience standpoint, there's way more G.I. Joe toy collectors than there are Ghostbuster toy collectors. I think there's a lot of G.I. Joe toy collectors out there. I think that's why you really saw how popular this classified line is. And they're coming out with a new assortment like all the time, seemingly. So that one's been a big hit. The figures are great. If you ever look at them and look at the detail, they're called G.I. Joe Classified. They're fantastic.
So you mentioned movies and things like that and kind of being in the news and media kind of gets people, you know, excited about a product or whatever. One, I don't even know if you know anything about this. I'm just springing this up on you right now, is a movie that was insanely popular, Barbie. Okay, like, so do you know anything about Barbie and the collectability of them and how valuable they can be or are? I mean, what was that, Mark? Did that movie help that at all or no, or just not?
When people bring in Barbies, when we like appraise them and stuff, generally the ones we get in are from the 90s, and they seemingly don't go up much in value, the ones from the 90s. So I think it's one of those things, they make so many of them and they're so easy to find at retail. I can tell you, I never see them like at shows. When we do collector shows and we do Comic Cons and things like that, where there's like a big secondary market where people are reselling things, I don't see Barbies. The only thing I can think of is that they're pretty easy to find at retail. The movie Barbies, I remember kind of seeing them in the store and I remember hearing they were kind of hot. But I actually don't know how hard they were to find or how much value went up, because it's one of those things, when you go to the store, there's a whole aisle of them. So I don't see prices on those things like getting crazy, just from what I've noticed.
Unless it's like I don't know when exactly Barbie came out, but unless it was like original Barbies from the 70s or 80s, I'm not sure when it released.
They came out in the late 50s.
50s, okay.
And if it's like the first Barbie, like the first one, even if she's opened, I want to say she's like $2,000 or $3,000, something like that. So yeah, those original ones do quite well.
So you mentioned earlier too, Legos. I didn't realize until recently, I mean like 3 years ago or so, how insanely pricey Legos can be, and people go after them. Like at garage sales, if they see someone selling Legos, they're like, I'll take the whole bin or whatever. Like, tell me about the Lego market and educate our listeners. Like, what's going on with that? And have they ever slowed down? Like, I feel like Lego's been around forever.
Legos are funny because their price points are expensive. However, this is what I tell customers, is that they are pricey, but if you take care of them, you can't break them. So if you take care of them, they last generations. If you lose the instruction manual, their website, you can print any instruction manual from any set they've ever released. So as long as you don't use the parts, they last forever. I think that's the draw to Legos. The minifigs are quite popular, the little minifigures that come with the sets. Those are really popular. So like those really, they Legos really shoot up in value. When they retire sets, they go up a certain percentage almost right away. From a strictly investment standpoint, sealed Lego sets are a pretty solid investment, honestly.
Yeah.
It really is, because they all get retired, and they all go up, and they all seemingly go one direction. The Disney ones are like a guarantee, like you can't lose like on those. So kids love them. I mean,
adults love them.
They're one of the top three. I mean, they're right in there with Hasbro and Mattel, and they just do the build Lego brand. They're super popular. Are they pricey? Yes, but there's a reason. It's not like they're pricey for no reason. It's for what you're getting and the fact that you can't break it. Take care of it and you'll be handing it to your kids and they'll be handing it to your grandkids. Like, that's the appeal. they're indestructible. That's the thing with those. I mean, we'll really only take them in if they're in package or if they're built, because sometimes people will just bring a big box of a bunch of different sets.
Yeah.
That's tough, man, to find somebody that's going to take the time to figure out what's what with the box of Legos. That's a whole thing. I don't know. We avoid that.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So you're like, hey, listen, I'll weigh this. Maybe I'll buy you some price, but I'm not going through and figuring out.
No. But anyway, you can see the minifigures, and some of those minifigures.
Yeah, I was going to ask you on that.
They get wild on some of those prices.
Which ones are, do you know offhand, like which set or which minifigures are worth like so a lot of money?
There's so many. I mean, the classic one is the first Star Wars set, which was a Lego store exclusive. It was like Cloud City or something. And it had like a Lando and a Boba Fett. And the Boba Fett figure, is unique, and he goes for, I'm not even sure, I know over $1,000 for just the figure.
Just the figure, not the set, just the figure.
Just the one figure, just the Boba Fett, yeah. Lando's a few hundred dollars. Like, I do know we got in a Black Pearl playset from Pirates of the Caribbean maybe like a year ago, and it was the villain, Davy Jones. He was like a $100 figure, just the figure. So it's kind of like certain figures that they only release with these sets, like these giant sets, and that was the only way to get the figure. And then if it's just kind of like a popular figure from a certain property, like there's good potential there, it's going to shoot up. So yeah. Legos are strong. I mean, yeah.
What about Hot Wheels? I've been seeing that around lately, and maybe it's just, you know, what pops up on my feed, but I know nothing about like the Hot Wheels or little car, you know.
They've just been around forever, and they're so, you know, they're only like a buck to get. So they're just one of those things that are fun for people to collect. They're fun to hunt for. They do a good job of having like a special edition, like chase piece and the case. And so I know the people that are into Hot Wheels are like really into Hot Wheels and really into going to stores and hunting for.
Is it almost like with that, like it's the chase? It's the
complete. It's the hunt. Yeah. Yeah. And then finding, you know, they'll find a chase piece that they only paid a buck on that.
But you found it.
Much more than that. And I guess, yeah, it's just the high of finding that rare piece and only paying a dollar. I just know the Hot Wheel collectors are super into it. I mean, we have a small section of Hot Wheels in the store that we keep just to have because kids do love them. But, we don't do a ton of diecast. And again, it's something I don't see a lot of at stores. I mean, it shows, I mean, like when I go to Comic Cons and it's not something that I see represented a lot at Comic Cons in like the secondary market, at least not the ones I go to, not around here.
What seems to be have you been to the Motor City Comic Con? Have you set up there? And what do you see a bunch of usually when you go, for anyone that hasn't been to it?
Yeah, I would recommend it for anybody who's never gone. We help. Well, I mean, we put out flyers for it when it's coming around here, and I will talk to customers about it and kind of let them know if they're into this stuff and they've never been, they should go check it out. It is a lot of fun. We did our first one as vendors. And I went there. I think the first one I went as a shopper was maybe like 1997. I think was the first one I ever went to, just there checking it out as a shopper. And then I believe we set up at our first one, it probably would have been 2001, I want to say. And we've actually set up at that one every single time they've had it since 2001. The only time they didn't have it was during COVID. They were shut down for, I want to say, 2 years. They didn't have any. But every time they've had one, we've been there set up. Yeah, Funky Town's been there representing.
So
there's a lot to see. I mean, the people in costumes, it's kind of like the selection. You're not going to find that kind of selection anywhere in this state. I mean, there's probably, I couldn't guess how many vendor booths there are. It's hundreds. And there's just, you're going to find stuff that you didn't even know was around. And there's celebrities there. And like I said, people are dressed up in costumes.
It's turned into like pop culture too, right? It's not just about like, you know, comic heroes or Marvel and stuff, things like that. It's like pop culture.
It's changed. When we first started doing it, I would say every booth was either comic books or toys. They were one or the other. Then you started seeing like the Pokemon booths. And then over time, it was kind of like, you would see a lot of like arts and crafts. Then cosplay became a thing and anime. And so it's different now. There's definitely, well, comic books started the whole thing. There's definitely like way less comic book booths. Like that's noticeable compared to 20 years ago. I mean, you can just tell. And even the other thing that I find funny is back then, there were so many booths that had Star Wars toys in the 90s. Now I would say less than 10 booths in the whole place even have any Star Wars toys. It's just the way it's all just kind of changed over time. Definitely different. I would say like when those Marvel movies got really popular. So that would have been maybe, what do you think, like 13 years ago, 2010, mm-hmm. maybe? Mm-hmm. When those got really big, the general public found out who these characters were that they weren't really familiar with before, maybe, like Iron Man and Captain America. So that's when I really saw the attendance really balloon at Comic-Con. So there was maybe like from 2010 to 2012, I would estimate the attendance almost doubled. I mean, that's what I think, what I would estimate. I mean, but who was coming was kind of like the general public was coming. So they weren't necessarily there to buy comic books or action figures. They were just there to kind of look at the pop culture aspect and see the celebrities. And we find that our Funko Pops do really well at Comic-Con because Funko Pops do really well with the general public. Like, anybody will buy a Funko Pop. Somebody who doesn't collect comics or action figures, they'll buy a Funko Pop. So definitely
yeah, at Comic-Con.
yeah. So definitely it's the general public that's there now. That's why those crowds are so big. And I don't think the general public was necessarily there in numbers before like 2010, like before those Marvel movies.
So like you mentioned pop culture and, you know, movies, and obviously TV shows are part of pop culture and sitcom. I mean, how do those kind of toys sell? Like if I had I don't even know if Friends had like action figures of Monica, Rachel and Ross or whoever, but like, or like The Walking Dead, like those characters, like how do those type of toys do that, you know, that are TV shows, like action figures or whatever?
They can. Walking Dead was really popular for a while. Those toys were like extremely popular for the first handful of years. Yeah, they really cooled off.
As the show cooled off, I'm sure. Like, you know, people.
Yeah, it finally. Yeah, it took a while. It was popular for a long time. Even the comic books. I mean, the money that people were getting for those Walking Dead comics and those Walking Dead action figures there for a few years was like mind-boggling. But yeah, it finally cooled off. The general pop culture stuff, you're going to see a lot of that in Lego and like Friends. They make Friends Lego sets. And then Funko Pops. Funko Pops makes everything pretty much.
I saw like somebody said like once, you know, Matthew Perry passed away, like his Funko Pops had gone up. Like,
yeah, that's
like Chandler Bing. Not maybe like astronomically or anything like that, but they shot up a little.
No, you see that like when a wrestler passes away, their figures will go up. There's a wrestler that passed away within the last few months, and all his action figures shot up as soon as he passed away. So that's kind of like a normal thing. Yeah, I mean, because we have like a specialty section that's got a lot of like horror figures, like Freddy and Jason and Chucky and all that stuff, and that section stays pretty busy as well. I think it's because it's kind of a newer thing. They used to not have action figures for that kind of stuff. It's only been the last, since NECA's been doing them a lot in the last few years. So it's kind of like a new thing. They used to not make toys of rated R movies. So it's kind of niche, but it's kind of like a new thing. So people are responding to those pretty well. TV shows, I don't see a ton. There might be a small assortment here or there if it's popular. Game of Thrones had
action figures. I was just going to say, Game of Thrones, yeah.
They had action figures, and they were really popular when the show was at its height. I have a small section of them, and, you know, they're not the biggest movers now, but they're still cool. If you're a fan of the show and you go look at them, they're sweet. So it just kind of depends. They always do funny action figures. Like, they made action figures for the Austin Powers movies. Those are fantastic. They make action figures for, I'm going to show you something. They make action figures for Napoleon Dynamite. I think that movie is so funny.
I love that movie, actually. I mean, some people hated it, but I thought it was hilarious.
So here's a little two-pack of Napoleon and Kip. So, I mean, they make action figures of just different properties.
What about one of my favorite TV shows? I'm not sure if they're worth anything. Like Breaking Bad, did they do anything for like Walter White? And
They did. They did a couple lines. They did like a collector line where they were maybe like 6 inches tall and they were like detailed. And then they did these little retro ones that were like maybe 4 inches, and they looked retro. Like they looked like they would have looked if they came out in the 80s. They were called Reaction. was the brand name. But they did. They did this. They had, I forget the villain's name. And he had like his face sort of got melted. They had an action figure of that scene. Do you remember that?
Now you're making me, I love that show too. And I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah. They had an action figure of his death scene.
Forget the characters and the action figures. What about toys? Like, you know what I'm looking for, Chaz? And if you ever get one, you need to call me first and let me know. I'm looking for like an original, like the first Super Soaker. Like, what about toys like that? Like actual toys that you played with. Like, what's the market for those type of toys?
Sometimes people will bring in like original Furbies. I've had the original Tickle Me Elmo. I've had some of the original, like the first series of like the Toy Story guys. So some people save them. It just depends what it is. They tend to not, when I appraise price wise, they seem to not exactly shoot up like you would think that they would.
But I can still get one for a good price.
I think that you can probably still get and not get too bad. Yeah. I think you'd be all right.
So thrifting has been like a huge thing. Do you find that, hey, I could get one, or is it like, hey, these people are going in there already and they're like, you're good luck finding anything that's worth anything at this point?
I hear from people that do it. Me personally, it doesn't seem like the success rate would be worth the many trips it would take to find something good, is my experience. However, I've talked to people that are willing to make the trips and they end up finding good stuff. So it just, if you've got the time and you're willing to strike out, well, I don't know, 9 out of 10 times or whatever, then by all means, I mean, you will eventually find something. It just, do you want to take the time to make that many trips and not find anything? So I don't know. There's a lot of stores that are sort of clearance themed now. So You can find clearance stuff, and I think your success rate is going to be a little better than going to like a thrift store where it was just stuff that was donated. There's all these bargain outlet. There's, I don't know, there's different places. I don't know, Gabe's, TJ Maxx, all that stuff. Like,
yeah,
that stuff's all, Burlington Coat Factory has a toy section. It's all on clearance. Like, there's clearance stuff out there. Like, if you're just looking for bargains and getting stuff at half off or 70% off or whatever, those are great margins if you're looking to resell. And then they have those new stores where they buy by the pallet. They'll buy like a pallet of whatever from, I don't know, closeout from Amazon or whatever. I've never been to one of those stores, but yeah, they're just putting this product out that went through closeout or it's returns or whatever, and it's kind of like thrift, like you said. You don't know what's going to be in there, but it's going to be super cheap, whatever it is. And I know people find everything. They find electronics, they find toys, they find a bunch of different stuff. So
as far as finding like what is valuable and what's not for somebody, I mean, is it just go to a toy store and get it appraised by someone like you, Chaz, or like go to eBay and see, hey, what are these selling for? Like, what's a good place to find, you know, a gauged value?
Yeah, so it's actually pretty easy. Like, we'll appraise for free if stuff brings stuff in. We'll tell you what we think it's worth. Because we do that because if it's something I can use, I could make an offer on it. Generally, what I'll do is if I can't use, I'll try to point people in the right direction of where they can take it. But really, it's not that hard to appraise by yourself. I just use eBay is what I do. And I do it to where I just have to scan the UPC on the box. And it'll bring it up to me really quick, and I can see really quick like what people are asking and what people are paying. You have to do it on the app, though. You can't do it on the website. If you do it on the app, there's like a little icon of a camera. You just take a picture of the UPC. It takes like a second. You're not going to type nothing in, and it'll bring up information. You can get an idea. You know, you kind of have to figure out what condition yours is in and kind of find one that in similar condition. And it'll give you a pretty good idea of what the value is. It's pretty easy nowadays. But, you know, I would encourage somebody, if they got questions, call the shop. I'm here all the time. I would answer questions, and we do free appraisals.
Are there companies that authenticate or grade like toys that are maybe they were still in boxes or anything like that? Or is, because there's a, that there's an industry for that in sports cards and trading cards.
You can do it with toys as well. It's pretty expensive because they have to custom make the box, you know, because toys, the package sizes are all different. So they have to custom make like this display box for each figure. So it's quite pricey, but certain vintage toys that are in really good shape are probably worth it.
It's basically a numbers game, right? Is this worth it to, I mean, you're not gonna, you don't want to pay more for grading than what it's actually worth, right?
And it takes forever. It takes forever. Like I said, because they have to custom make the case for it. So it takes a long time. But I mean, they will even do like an open figure. They'll grade like an open figure, but if it comes back as a high grade, it's worth it. We don't really grade figures. I mean, we don't send them for grading. But I have a friend that does, but he deals in vintage stuff. So when he comes across a vintage toy in a really clean box, he can kind of gather himself what the grade's going to be. And he does deal in it, and it gets, I've seen some of his stuff, and he'll have these vintage toys that are all of a sudden into the thousands of dollars. So there's something to it, but again, it's kind of got to be vintage and in good shape. And then you might be onto something. Yeah.
All right. One more before I let you go. You mentioned COVID earlier. COVID really affected the trading card and sports cards industry. And I think it affected like pretty much, I mean, obviously it affected everyday life, but the collectible industry itself, I think really got affected by it. Tell me what, you know, what it did to toys post pandemic, pre pandemic. How was everything during the pandemic? Did it affect the toy market? How so?
Yeah. When COVID happened, pretty much overnight, collectibles in general seemed like they exploded in value. And I mean, I can just tell, like, just as an example, stuff that you can get online for, like, I'll just use an example, a G.I. Joe figure you can buy on eBay for like 30. Once COVID happened and people couldn't go to work, we're talking within a handful of days there, that $30 figure, I'm telling you, was all of a sudden like 60. Like all the numbers shot up. The whole collector market just shot up. Sports cards kind of came back when it kind of seemed they had been in a lull for quite some time. When COVID happened, they came like roaring back. Pokemon was like the hottest thing I've ever seen in my life. During COVID, when I would go to the store and I saw a line of like 30 people and I didn't know what was going on. And I'm like, that's like the Pokemon line. Like the card people are coming today. Like you really saw this explosion of values, and people were just like investing in stuff. So everything was rising in value. Comic book prices were going insane, during COVID, whatever, double value, more. I mean,
it
was all going crazy. And for us, we had to close for 3 months. And we were doing online sales while we were closed, and everything was selling like crazy. So we were actually okay, even though the storefront was closed. And then when we were allowed to reopen, like we just had massive foot traffic. Like it was crazy. And I could see it too, because I could see a lot of shops popping up during that time. A lot of the newer shops popped up during COVID, you know, during the past, whatever, a couple of years ago or whatever. So you saw card shops popping up. That hadn't happened in like 20 years, right? If I'm wrong. So
I think it made, you know what COVID did, a pandemic did too. It kind of made like it collecting cool. Like it wasn't, you know, everyone was doing it all of a sudden. They're like, yeah, it's not like you didn't have to like pretend you didn't do it or hide from it. Whatever. It was like, yeah, I've been, you know.
I think it makes people feel good. I think there's a kind of like, there's a feel good factor to it. It really is a fun hobby. You really are supporting things that you like. So I honestly think sometimes it is simple just to go buy yourself something little that you like and put it in your desk or whatever. It can't. So during that time when we were frankly getting bombarded with a lot of bad news, I don't know, just to maybe keep our state of mind positive, people were just doing something fun just to do something fun. And
a lot of times you had, when you were a kid, is when you had fun, whether it was collecting toys or cards or whatever, it kind of brought you back.
Because now
you had that money that you, because you have a real job, you know, that you could buy things that you couldn't buy when you were a kid.
Yeah. That is nostalgia right there. Yeah. So now the market, to me, my opinion, it seems to be just kind of getting back to where it was before COVID. It kind of seems like things are going down, but they're just going back to normal from exploding during COVID is kind of what it seems like where we're at now. It's hasn't gotten worse than before COVID. It's just, it's not crazy like it was. I think most of us knew that wasn't that hype, that trend wasn't going to last forever, right? It seemed like, right, you know, dance while the music's going, and then, but at some point, everything's going to kind of slow down, and it did. Yeah, and then it's the economy too. The economy plays a factor here as well. In the 90s, when collecting exploded, I just remember the economy was great back then. I remember that was one of the reasons why everybody was collecting back then. People were buying Beanie Babies and the economy was good. So that plays a part too. I feel like us as a shop, we're tethered to A, the economy, B, the state of collecting, and then just how popular the intellectual properties are at the time, like what kind of movies are coming out. Like, we're kind of tethered to those three things. Mm-hmm. So when it, you know, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's what it is.
Well, Chaz, man, I really appreciate you coming on and talking to me about all this. I'd love for you to check back in and
for sure,
you know, update us on anything new coming out, or even just old stuff that we didn't get to talk about, because there's so much to talk about with the toy industry and collecting. And you at your shop, you have comics, you have Funko Pops, you have all this other stuff. So, and for people that don't know or want to get out and see it in person, could you let them know where you're at again and maybe a phone number or all your socials?
Yeah, we are on Van Dyke. We're in Utica. So we're pretty much at Van Dyke and Hull Road. And we're on Facebook. And we're also on Instagram. And we're at 45249 Van Dyke Avenue. That's in Utica. And I would love to do it again.
Thank you, Chaz. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Like I said it before when I started this, if you enjoy it, let someone know. You can download it and download past episodes. Also, I'm on YouTube, Kang Collects, K-H-A-N-G Collects. I'm on Twitter, same name, Kang Collects. I'm on Instagram, Kang Collects, same name. Super easy, guys. Find me out, reach out to me. And also, you can email me at kangcollects@gmail.com. I'm going to do a mailbag soon. If you want to let me know what kind of guests you want on, what topics to hit. And as always, keep collecting. If you collect what you love, you can't go wrong.